It's showtime.
Okay, Tokyo,
South America,
Australia,
France,
Germany,
UK,
Africa.
Here we go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we go, off and running on this, the 18th day of May, 2023. This is The Horn. HeadOn.live is where you'll find us on the interweb tubes. That's also where you go if you'd like to be part of the merry, wacky, zany, real-time, madcap, multimedia extravaganza that is The Horn chat room in the 3 hours in which this program is live, Monday through Friday, 5 to 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 2 to 5 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time, all time zones in between, and the great globe round. And whatever time it is where you're, where you are listening to the podcast. With regard to the live broadcast, however, if you do go to headon.live, well, click on chat room and pick out a screen name and a password, and, well, you'll be greeted by early arrivers in the aforementioned Merry Wacky Zany, etc. Early arrivers Anatole and Squeaky, and capably moderated by longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, while he is, in fact, a third-stage guild navigator, has declined to fold space because he'd be folding space into the center of the sun. Way too hot for the man cave, says Sparky. He is capably assisted by his colleague, Horn Chief Agronomist and Chief Mathematician and Bud Trimmer Emeritus, Roger, in Oregon. And they're experiencing, Oregon, they're experiencing some ridiculously high temperatures as well. Roger says they're expecting 90 degrees Fahrenheit by 3 p.m. Thank God, you know what's coming next. Thank God, climate change is just a
Chinese hoax.
Right, sure it is. Sure. Yeah. Hi, I'm Robin, and if you're listening to the podcast, pretty please, whatever platform you download the podcast from, whether it be Apple Podcasts or any of a number of others like Spotify, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, Podcast Republic, Podbean itself, please like and subscribe. We're seeing some increased numbers. We're seeing, and Brother Deacon Ace's theory appears to be correct. The more liking and subscribing that goes on, the more it appears that people find the program. And that's definitely exciting and inspiring. Let's see, just checking for all my little doodads here. Got my water bottle. There's a can of pineapple seltzer. Yeah, all good. Every program here at The Horn, however, does begin with gratitude. And for that reason, we say thank you to our 18th day of the month PayPal subscribers, and that means thank you. Thank you so very much to our dear friend who wishes to remain anonymous in the South Pacific. Thank you. And thank you to Charlene in Rogues Island. Thank you to Robert. Thank you to our dear friend Joy in Ann Arbor. Soon jetting away to go see Mama in the greater Fort Worth area. Well, there'll be some upsides and downsides to that, Joy. Please stay safe. As the old mountaineer says in Matewan, you don't want to go there. Them people's crazy. He says that of Matewan in Bloody Mingo County, but lately the same can be said of Texas. Yeah, be safe. Be safe, please. Let me make sure I didn't miss anyone. I did not, so thank you all. And thank you to Annette, who is not Annette. No, not this Annette, different Annette, who says, love you, Robin. Thank you so much. So where's the fundraising stand? Well, $685. And that would cover, let's see, that's where you got $85 of last of Tuesday, all of yesterday, and all of today to deal with. And that's not nearly as deep a hole as we've been in. So maybe, you know, maybe we'll get lucky and knock some of that out. It certainly would be wonderful if we could. It's very nice to have the AEP extortion racket off my back. And thanks to everybody who helped make that happen over the course of the past 2 weeks. It's nice not to just sit around, you know, trying to prepare for the program and worrying. And program note, there's not a cloud in the sky. Usually, if there's a thunderstorm warning or something, I'd do, but you know, there's not a cloud in the sky. Beautiful day today. Oh, it was warm. It was so warm. And I realized that today was Farmer's Market Day over in Oak Hill. And there's a woman over there who bakes things, bread primarily. And it occurred to me while I was out running errands and popped over there, and she was there, and so I got a loaf. 'Cause I'm counting carbs. Sure you are, Robin. Sure you are. I couldn't resist, though. She makes salt. She's one of the few people around here who knows how to make salt rising bread. So I got a loaf of salt rising bread, which has nothing to do with salt doing the raising of the bread. It's just what it's called. It has a powerful and profound aroma, but oh, it toasts up so beautifully. So just beautiful. And I can't wait till in the morning, a couple of slices of toast with some nice local creamery butter and some no-sugar added orange marmalade. That's a little slice of heaven for me. Yeah, but I've been buying from her for years. But I hadn't seen her in a very long time, like in excess of 3 years. And so I walked up and we talked. And so I got the loaf of sourdough bread. I got a loaf of her garlic dill bread. Oh, great heavenly days to make toast with that. Put a little bit of lox on it, some sour cream, some thin sliced tomato, some thin sliced red onion, and a few capers. It's a perfect, perfect. It's not overbearing. It's not super heavy. And it's just a beautiful little mid-afternoon snack. And as we talked and as I paid, she looked me up and down and said, and she's, I think she's Swedish. I can't recall, maybe, I think she's, but she looked me up and down, said, you're a tall girl, aren't you? And I said, well, yes, I am. How tall are you? And I lied and said 6 feet. Well, I am. I've shrunk a little. I've shrunk a little. It's good. 6 feet. She said, my goodness gracious, there's a lot of you. I didn't quite know what to do with that, but it was nice. There are these little grace note moments in life, and you take them and you cherish them, and it was fun. And I found somebody who is nearby who raises bees, so I have a source for local honey to try to hold back pollen allergies and things like that, because if you can get local honey,
it's kind of, at least the conventional wisdom is that it's sort of like an inoculation against the pollen in your area. And this stuff has never been processed. It's never been heated. It's just honey. And it's delicious. So that was my afternoon. Of course, it's thorn in the side Thursday. And thank you to George out in Coarse Gold. Thank you, George. Nice talking with you yesterday. George got us started so that we are definitely not a goose egg this evening, and that gets us down to 660. So thank you, George, for doing that. Let's see. Where to start with Thorn in the Side Thursday? No, and what I was getting at, there's not a cloud in the sky, so there's every chance in the world that the power will go out. It makes no sense whatsoever, but since I am presently in the good graces of Appalachian Electric Power Extortion Racket, I have no faith whatsoever in their ability to keep the power going. Just saying. No, Ralph, she had not seen me since my change, and she didn't even recognize me. That's how profound it's been. And stopped for a cup of coffee. Yeah, I make the running joke about anytime I'm going to eat or drink, I try to take a moment and say a word to the shade of my father. Because anytime he put on a clean white t-shirt, the first thing he would do immediately thereafter would be to manage to spill some coffee down the front of it. And then he would yell, "Kenneth!" at himself. And so, lo and behold, I got myself an iced decaf. It was lovely, wonderful, bracing. And the cup was a little bit overfilled. And right down the right side of the top of my tank top. And which then meant, well, no. It's like, damn it, Dad! Because I forgot to say hi, Dad. That would have been fine if I just said hi, Dad. But I didn't, and I paid the price. So then, before I could go and do anything else, because it was kind of embarrassing where the stain was, it sort of drew one's eye, if you know what I mean. So I ran into Big Lots and was just looking for any kind of crummy little t-shirt that didn't cost much money to replace my tank top with. And I found a Tinkerbell t-shirt. Because, you know, Tinkerbell is kind of she's my avatar. Because you have to, because if and please bear in mind, Annette has been calling me Tinkerbell throughout most of the time that we've known each other. In fact, it was her idea. And so, because, well, she knows me. And she said, you know, you and Tinkerbell are the same. If nobody's clapping, you're dying. I mean, I think that's a little unfair. But I found a Tinkerbell t-shirt, and it was authorized Disney merch, so it's like, wow. It, you know, steeply marked down over at Big Lots. But I grabbed it, and it replaced my coffee-stained top. And I kind of got a little moment of joy out of it, just thinking, you know, I thought some, you know, horribly unpleasant thoughts about Ron Monkey Up Declantis and things that I hope befall him in his life somewhere along the way. And put my Tinkerbell t-shirt on and went about my business and felt terribly cute. But that was, and then I went, and that's what I was wearing when she looked at me and said, "You're a tall girl, aren't you?" Yeah. Anyway, just fun little moments. It's nice to get out, walk around, stopped and walked around on a little trail over on the rim of the gorge just to be, you know, just get out, move around in the sun. Because you know how winter impacts me. We get 6 months of winter, 3 months of sketchy, rainy, and then, you know, if we're lucky, we get 3 months of undeniably, absolutely pleasant, warm weather. And those you have to take advantage of around here. And the gorge is absolutely beautiful. Everything is green. Everything's fully leafed out now, for the most part, it seems. At some point, probably in the next month or so, the rhododendrons will come in, and they're just a riot of beauty. And so it's nice to, you know, it's just, if you live in an Eden, it's best to get out in it. And I've got some walking to do. But anyway, that's either here nor there. I just wanted to sort of celebrate the glory of the day. And I did. And then I came back home, and here I am. Wait, what? Lee in New York, you are supporting the side opposing the mouse in the Florida war? Yay, the Horn community promises to clap if you get sick. I'm supporting the mouse in their war against fascism. Whoever imagined that a cartoon mouse and his cartoon mouse girlfriend and a little fairy and... yeah, would be the icons of fascist opposition, and you know, of course, a huge corporation. But one gets the idea that Bob Iger, the CEO of Disney, is not screwing around. And that suits me right down to the ground. That was a breaking story earlier today. Disney has announced, they had previously said they were going to build a whole new campus in Central Florida. They were going to transfer 2,000 employees, to work on digital technology, finance, product development. You know, this isn't a new theme park. This is the stuff that plays in theaters and online and whatnot. And 2,000 people were going to come from their head, because their headquarters, Disney's is in Burbank, beautiful downtown Burbank, for those of us old enough to remember Laugh-In. And they were going to send 2,000 people from Southern California to work on the brand new campus in Central Florida. It would have been about 20 miles from Walt Disney World itself. Would have being the operative phrase. Because it's not going to happen now. Josh DeMauro is chairman of the Parks, Experiences, and Products Division, sent out a memo to Disney employees that, quote, new leadership and changing business conditions have prompted Disney to nix the transfer of its employees and the building of the new campus. This would have been huge. This would have been a real feather in the cap for a place like Florida. But now it's a no. And that's the kind of thing that, you know, Ron Monkey Up DeKlantis can pass all the don't say gay bills he wants to, but he cannot compel Disney to spend money in Florida that they did not otherwise have to spend. And they were already committed to spending it. So this means they're retooling their ideas going forward. And what's significant about this, and I'm looking at the Associated Press story here, and there's some, this just seems a bit weak linguistically. Disney and DeSantis have been engaged in a tug of war for more than a year that has engulfed the GOP governor in criticism as he prepares to launch an expected presidential bid in the coming weeks. It's not a tug of war. For the people impacted by this, yesterday, Monkey Up signed into law, and it makes my eyes cross just reading about it, how one could even think to have the judicial or legislative power to do this. He signed into law this bill that allows children to be kidnapped. It gives Florida family courts and courts generally the power to take children away from their custodial parents in order to force them to live lives which will be bad and harmful for them, and purports to even give Florida courts to all the power and the jurisdiction. And if the legal brain trust of the Horn Family Community Congregation wants to opine on this, I welcome it. But it purports to give Florida state courts the ability to modify and rewrite custody orders from other jurisdictions, that is to say, other states. And as Slim Pickens said in Dr. Strangelove, I've been to two rodeos, a parade, and a meeting on the ground, and I ain't never seen anything as crazy as this. Because the idea that Florida can just take jurisdiction away from, I don't know, let's say, New York, and change child custody, if, for instance, there's a split custody agreement, every parent of a child who has a divorced spouse in Florida I'm struggling with trying to describe this. Let's say you've got a couple. They've got a kid. Parent A lives in New York. The divorce was in New York. The kid lives in New York, but the kid has to go down for summers in Florida. Well, if that child happens to be, here we go, trans, this bill says that the state of Florida can kidnap the child, change, and the court can change the custody and give custody to the Florida parent. And that the court of original jurisdiction in, say, New York, has nothing to say in the matter. And that just flabbergasts me. There's not even a passing attempt to bring that in line with any understanding of jurisdiction from, say, oh, I don't know, Magna Carta to the present. That's how profound this is. So, anyway, that's not a tug of war. That is an existential struggle for existence. And of course, the Don't Say Gay bill encompasses even more than that. And there are a lot of LGBTQ people who work for Disney. And some of them had already been transferred from California to Florida. Well, now, with the cancellation of these plans, the House of Mouse says, well, we're not going to do what we had planned. And in fact, we are not going to transfer 2,000 people. And anyone who is already transferred, who wants to come back home to civilized California, is more than welcome so to do. Now, none of that appears in the AP story. I found that in other accounts. CNBC had a little bit broader coverage. The facility was to be at Lake Nona, N-O-N-A. They describe the ongoing conflict between Disney and Monkey Up as a bitter feud, not a tug of war. So CNBC may actually have a little bit better handle on what's at stake. Josh DeMauro went on to say, this was not an easy decision to make, but I believe it is the right one. Well, it certainly is if you care about your employees. I know, corporate America, right? And CNBC, from their text, says, many Disney employees balked at the company's relocation plans when they were first announced in July 2021 by former CEO Bob Chapek. While some left the company or transitioned to other posts within Disney that would not require a move to Florida, others held out hope that the plan would fizzle out after a postponement. The campus was originally slated to open in 2022 to 2023, but was later delayed to 2026. And Josh DeMauro said employees who have already moved to Florida may be able to relocate back to California. He went on and said, it is clear to me that the power of this brand comes from our incredible people, and we are committed to handling this change with care and compassion. Disney has a lot more power here than Monkey Up Duclantis does. And it would give me incredible joy if the House of Mouse would squash him like the bug he is. Because remember, the nature of fascism, and make no mistake, Ron Monkey Up Duclantis is a fascist. Okay? The idea that the old paradigm of a two-party system of more or less centrist Democrats who lean slightly to the left and more or less centrist Republicans who lean slightly to the right is a bigger fairy tale than Sleeping Beauty. Where we are now in 2023 is a clearly defined struggle between light and darkness, between good and evil, and in fact, between freedom and fascism. Ron Monkey Up Duclantis is a fascist. And if indeed he does run for president, I think he's probably walking into a buzzsaw in Nitwit Nero. Not because I have any respect for Nitwit Nero, but moreover, because Nitwit Nero's base is not interested in Trump Lite, even if Trump Lite is a bigger fascist and has an arguably better skill set. It's worth remembering that Monkey Up did serve in the House of Representatives. So he has some knowledge of how that process works, as opposed to Nitwit Nero, who was almost entirely clueless of how the American constitutional system of governance operates. noting that Disney's new campus has been canceled. Lee in New York says, of course, of course. Governor White Boots hates learning. He'll be glad to see one less campus. You got to wonder what he was studying up there at Harvard, for the love of God. Now, let's see. What's that? Darlene in Connecticut. My sister in despising autumn, among other things. My sister in the love of warmth and bite and summer. Yeah, you're bemoaning the on-the-cooler-side spring as well. Springs for the last several years have been crappy overall. I feel these days are so damned precious and not to be squandered, so when we get temps in the 30s and frost like we did this morning, completely killing off my lilacs, it is so frustrating. Aw, Darlene, I'm sorry. But yeah, it was cold and windy here last night. We had 25-mile-an-hour gusts today. You know, you're supposed to get the winds in March, because March is kite-flying weather, right? All the old paradigms are gone thanks to climate change. April showers bring May flowers, and May flowers bring colonizing, disease-bearing white people. You know the old rhyme. John in Central PA. Miserable fucking Nazi scum. Don't hold back, John. I hate Ron Death Cuntus. I hope someone takes that fucker out. There, I said it. Goodness me. I was just thinking, you know, frogs and locusts, rivers of blood, pestilences, maybe some loathsome and horribly painful disease. And let's keep it localized on Monkey Up. But then again, it is Florida. And I tuned into my filthy morning habit today, of course, and saw them engaging in a discussion of, dear God, World Cup 2026, which will be hosted in North America. And the fact that, and they had the mayor of New York on, whose name I can never get right, and the governor, Phil Murphy of New Jersey, talking about how awesome it would be to have some of the World Cup games in the greater tri-state area metroplex co-prosperity sphere. Hi, Jessica. And sure, why not? Because one of the other cities that's begging is Dallas. And I found myself in agreement with him, saying, why would you send an international audience to Dallas, where they not only don't try to control gun violence, they actively encourage it? Wouldn't that just suck? The world loves the World Cup, the largest sporting event on earth. And it's fun and it's exciting. I like the World Cup. Yeah, as a result of Ted Lasso, I'm a bigger football, football, not NFL, no fun league. I'm a bigger football fan than I ever was. I understand a little bit more about it. Still don't get offsides, but never mind. Don't understand icing in hockey either, and don't try to explain it. But imagine traveling from some reasonably civilized country, say, Spain, France, Sweden, and having to go to Dallas, and then some lawful gun owner opens up with an AR-15 and wipes out people from a handful of countries. Because freedom. No. States with no laws dealing with things like semi-automatic assault weapons should not host World Cup matches in 2026 in North America. Not much of a problem regarding that with Canada. hell, the cartels and the gangs will probably mind their manners in Mexico, but in the blood red states, especially Texas, hell no. But then again, we're talking about FIFA, and if Greg Abbott, if Greg Asbot, or whoever succeeds him, should happen to offer up some strategically placed bribes, they might wind up with the damn championship game in Dallas. What a nightmare that would be. So I thought the Disney thing was a good place to start. We've got some SCOTUS news today. But Darlene and I both saw the same story. Senator Feinstein's health complications from shingles more severe than disclosed. This is... Well, it doesn't stop being worrisome. Read a story the other day that says for years, and this breaks my heart, because Dianne Feinstein's career has been brilliant. She has, in many ways, taken sledgehammers to glass ceilings. And her end should not be the definition of the arc of her life. And this is nightmarish. You know, we talked about, wondered what was going, and speculated, you know. Ace, you cynic. Yes, yes, Robin, we can most certainly rely on a $200 billion company to oppose fascism. That's a sure bet. I never said, look, this is one of those you can't let the perfect be the enemy of the good. And where monkey up and the mouse are concerned, the enemy of my enemy is my friend. It's not the best arrangement, but it's what we have. And yeah, Ralphs, you're absolutely correct. Ralphs saying earlier, this law should get the ACLU going strong. I have a feeling the ACLU and a couple of other legally oriented groups are going hammer and tongs at all of this. We talked about this a little bit last Friday, when Steve in New York brought up the concept of flooding the zone, that you know you have to win every time. All Monkey Up has to do is win once. Funny how that's the that's the same thing that was said 20 years ago about terrorists. International terrorists, and now we've got a domestic terrorist who's the governor of the third most populous state in the entire country. And he's in the process of destroying it, because that's what fascism does. Where's General Sherman when you need him? And as touching upon the World Cup, Lee in New York says, it'll be in North America? I did not know. Eating poutine during the game? Damn straight. I'm sure they'll sell poutine in the stands for the matches that are in Canoodlia. And maybe serve their coffee sweetened with maple syrup. That was actually what wound up on my tank top today. Well, a coffee shop across the river does an iced latte, decaf, of course, that they sweeten with just a hint of locally sourced West Virginia maple syrup and a little bit of smoked sea salt. It's perfect on a warm day. Just perfect. Anyway, back, pay attention, Robin. No, it turns out that Dianne Feinstein's condition was much worse than anyone had been told. The shingles that she got, and I don't understand the medical process behind this, but her shingles case was so bad that it brought on encephalitis, swelling of the brain, and something else called Ramsey-Hunt syndrome that causes facial paralysis. When the first photographs of Dianne Feinstein emerged when she returned to the Senate, the general consensus was, oh my God, she's had a stroke. Her spokesman, Adam Russell, says that she has since recovered from the encephalitis. But apparently she's still suffering the symptoms, after effects, of the Ramsey-Hunt syndrome. And like I said, there was a story previously, a week or so ago, that said for years there has been a secret plan in place in her office to keep her from ever going out, walkabout by herself. Somebody was always at the ready if she decided she wanted to go somewhere and went with her, lest she cause mayhem for herself by saying something controversial or outright wrong or contrary to a position she had already announced that she was taking. This is bad. She was even confused this week. A group of reporters asked her about her absence. She said, I've been here. I wasn't gone anywhere. So even now she has vision problems and balance problems. She's missed some votes. She won't make them all, but supposedly they'll get her there for the ones that really matter. Hint, they all really matter in a Senate as narrowly divided as ours. Then today she said she denied having encephalitis. She said she had a really bad flu because CNN stuck a camera and a microphone in her face in a hallway. And then her comms office had to jump in and say she misspoke because the doctors had not used the specific term encephalitis to her in the course of her treatment. This is so troubling on so many levels. Adam Russell, her spokesman, said when discussing the shingles complications with her doctors, they often spoke in broader terms when describing the complications rather than always using medical terminology. And in a perfect world, perhaps she would, as she has said, finish out this term and retire. But next year is a long way away. And we need someone, Californians need someone, who can fully fulfill the obligations of the office. Now, Governor Gavin Newsom recently said that if she were to resign, that they would, that he would, rather, appoint an African-American woman to serve out the remainder of her term. So there goes our little theory of replacing her on an interim basis with Barbara Boxer. Barbara Lee, Katie Porter, and Adam Schiff are all announced candidates for her office. Ro Khanna, member of the House of Representatives, and a strong supporter of Barbara Lee, who has said that Dianne Feinstein should resign, simply said, "It's a sad situation. I wish people would just put politics aside and talk to her about stepping down. That is the morally right thing to do and the right thing for our nation." Through her staff, of course, Senator Feinstein issued a statement saying, "I'm back in Washington voting and attending committee meetings while I recover from complications related to a shingles diagnosis. I continue to work and get results for California." God. Also disturbing is the fact that Feinstein's office, answering a question we asked here, not answering directly to us, but when it was first announced that she was suffering from shingles, which is no laughing matter, it is hell. I asked the question, "No shingles vaccine?" Well, according to her office, she did get the shingles vaccine. But apparently she got the first generation shingles vaccine, not the two-stage one. I got that one too. I've still not gotten the Frank shingles vaccine. And if I can get health insurance anytime in the near future, that's way up high on the list. My father had it. I saw him go through it. He wound up with profound, long-lasting neuropathy, and it was awful. I don't want that to happen to me. It's actually wood, not my head. Answering Ralph's question, what did DiFi's aides do to prevent her misstatements? Primarily, they just tried to be with her if she went out and about and keep the reporters away from her, which is nigh unto impossible. Matt in San Francisco, subject line, Dianne. "Instead of weekend at Bernie's, it's weekend at Dianne's. The rumors about her mental capacity have been swirling around for years. The entire thing is just really sad. It seems to have gone far past the possibility of a graceful exit. I've always thought it would be in everyone's best interest for her to resign, especially for her. She obviously is not well, and it must take many people to cover for her. For Christ's sake, she's in her 90s. She deserves a peaceful retirement. We Californians will get by." I sympathize with every word of that, Matt. And I think, for instance, Ro Khanna is trying to toe a really fine line in what he says. The problem being that he's already a declared partisan in the campaign for 2024. And the responses of, "Well, it's sexist to say that," have some air of validity, because Strom Thurmond comes to mind. Bob Byrd comes to mind. Even now, Charles Grassley comes to mind. Remember, he's got the whistleblower. Sure you do, Chuckles. It just feels like that this could be solved. More, and you use the right word, Matt, gracefully. Because we know how ugly the maggots are and the maggot senators. And if you have the stomach to go over and see what they're, and I don't, I'm sure every word emanating from their filthy gobs is pure, ugly, misogynistic poison. Because that's who they are. Lee in New York, obligatory Star Trek reference. I was thinking about the episode, The Deadly Years. Attending meetings? Old Kirk was in a meeting. Asleep. Signed, Lee. Snoring in New York City. Thank you. And by the way, yeah, the mayor of New York, whose name I always get wrong, is Eric Adams, whom I, for reasons having to do entirely with the goddess of irony, I can't resist referring to as Douglas Adams. You know, Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. So long, and thanks for all the fish. And 42. And all of that. The Feinstein story I was working from was from the Washington Post. The original article, the breaking news, was broken by the New York Times. It contains this statement, the New York Times story does. Many people close to Ms. Feinstein, a six-term senator, describe seeing her operating in the Senate in her current state as frightening. A tragic end to a formidable career in politics that they worry is casting a shadow over her legacy and her achievements. And the New York Times goes on to say that there are questions. It has resurfaced questions about whether Ms. Feinstein is fit to continue serving, even for that long. Well, see, here's the problem, New York Times, old gray lady. There's nothing about senatorial fitness in the Constitution. And God knows, she is by far not the worst that the Senate has ever seen. Might be a good time to mention the fact that the word Senate comes from the Latin word senex, which means old, and is akin to the Greek governing body called the gerousia, which is Greek for old, the governing body of old men. Gerousia, geriatric, senex, senile. Right. Okay, we'll get back into the governmental stuff, but this is a headline that just sort of... Oh, wow. Leon Scum is back in the news. Because there's a lawsuit against him and X Corp, the holding company for Twitter. It's being held in the District Court of Delaware. It was filed this past Tuesday. The civil suit accuses Leon Scum and X Corp of 14 counts of malfeasance and misfeasance, fraud, breach of contract, labor, violation of labor laws. But it also has some juicy gossip. And that seems to be the way with modern civil pleadings, and, well, for that matter, speaking indictments now. consider the details in the lawsuit against Rudy Giuliani that we discussed, what was it, Tuesday? Here's how weirded out Leon Scum is. Apparently, two bodyguards follow Leon Scum everywhere he goes, and in the Twitter San Francisco headquarters, they would even follow him into the little billionaire's room. And in the lawsuit, there is a claim that a man named Steve Davis, who is the CEO of the Boring Company, no, really, the Boring Company, leave it alone, Robin. Steve Davis told one of the plaintiffs, a 12-year employee of Twitter who was in charge of how the offices were laid out. He's a plaintiff in the new lawsuit. Told him to get busy working on a new restroom closer to Leon Scum's office. This was because Leon Scum said that he wanted a pee-pee station next to his office so he, quote, didn't have to wake his security team and cross half the floor to use the bathroom in the middle of the night. Leon, you're a relatively young man. Ism's prostate the size of a grapefruit now, Leon? So, again, the plaintiff, Killian, responded to Davis that he said he would start getting the permits to build Leon's personal John. And paraphrasing Steve Davis of the Boring Company, Davis said, we don't do that. We don't have to follow those rules. Just, this is where it gets fun. Just hire some, I don't even know if Steve from Georgistan is in the listening tonight, but just call a guy. In other words, get an unlicensed plumber to build the crapper for Leon, because nobody with an actual plumber's license would want to put it at risk by working on an unpermitted project. I'm guessing a state like California takes things like permitting fairly seriously. And this is how professional Leon Scum is. When Business Insider reached out for comment from the Leon Scum camp, particularly Twitter, the Twitter comms team responded to Business Insider with an auto reply of a poop emoji. Now, ordinarily, that would just be a snide little riposte, but in this case, one might argue that since this is a case, it, at least in part, about an, 2023, what are you doing to me? An illicit potty. Who knew? The poop, they might want to rethink the standard auto-reply poop emoji. Because in this case, it could maybe be a confession. It must be terrible to be a privileged billionaire and not want to walk halfway across the floor to go potty. Such are the momentous dealings and doings and do-doings of our time. Leon. And by the way, in the last couple of days, getting back to the business of governing, yesterday, the weaker speaker and his minions managed not to have to have an on-the-record vote on whether to expel New York Representative George DeVolder, Anthony Santos, Catherine the Great. Because there was a Democratic motion on the floor to expel Santos. And instead, the Republicans made a motion to send it to the House Ethics Committee. The vote was 221 to 204. Strict party line vote. Seven members of the House voted present. All the Republicans voted in favor of the motion. The Democrats on the House Ethics Committee voted present. Meanwhile, the motion to refer to the Ethics Committee was actually introduced by Representative Anthony Desposito, a maggot from New York. He represents the district next to Anthony Santos, George DeVolder, Henry V. And he referred to Santos as a stain on this institution, a stain on the state of New York, a stain on Long Island, and a stain on the beloved Nassau County. I am personally in favor of this individual's expulsion from this house. Regrettably, though, I'm in the understanding that we currently do not have the two-thirds support from members in this House to expel that individual. Now, one of the people whose support he doesn't have is his Speaker of the House, because Kevers needs George's vote. Robert Garcia of California offered the resolution of expulsion. It was Kevers who said, no, let's send it to the House Ethics Committee. They're already investigating him anyway. Kevers at a press conference said, I think we can look at this very quickly and come to a conclusion on what George Santos, Anthony DeVolder, Louis XIV, did and did not do through ethics, a safe bipartisan committee. Equal number of Republicans and Democrats, and I think that's when you bring it back to Congress if it rises to the ability. Representative Garcia said, there hasn't been action, and so now's the appropriate time to make sure that Republicans are on record if they're going to actually stand by someone that is a serial liar and a fraud. They're going to have to record a vote, and the American people will be watching their votes. Yesterday, I wondered what it was that Ron Monkey Up Duclantis throws at the walls when he has a hissy. I decided it was mayonnaise. What do you think Kevers throws at the wall when he becomes overwrought with emotion by just the shittiness of his? He was so looking forward to having a 40 vote majority and just running roughshod over the Democratic minority. I bet he had dreams about it before the red wave dematerialized into a bit of spotting. Then there's Jim Jacket Off Jordan, wherein things didn't go particularly well Because once again, Jim Jacket Off Jordan is down a whistleblower. It was another of those seemingly endless hearings on the weaponization of government, in which the Democrats, and not doing anything particularly outrageous in requesting it, the Democrats sought to find out why testimony of the whistleblower had not been shared with them. Because that's usually how the process works. Everybody has access to the information. Well, Jim Jacket Off Jordan ignored the Democrats. You know, the same way he ignored young men who had been raped over at the athletics department of The Ohio State University. Tom and Sunny San Rafael. Hey, Tom. Weaker speaker. I suspect he throws his sippy cup of milk. And he goes, milk. Very sweet. Sippy cup. Well played. There's our first cowbell of the evening, Tom. It was, to say the least, chaotic, zany, because, well, they're not very good at this. Let's go to the audio, shall we?
I yield back.
Chair, recognize the gentlelady from New York, Ms. Stefanik.
I yield to the chair.
Excuse me, Mr. Chair. I think you were going to indulge the Congresswoman from Florida and her point of inquiry.
The gentlelady from Florida is recognized.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's my understanding
are you making a point of order?
No, I'm asking you a question.
Okay.
A point of inquiry.
Okay.
It's my understanding that the minority in this committee under the rules is entitled to the same testimony, information, documents that the majority is entitled to. So, I mean, I'm not aware that you're able to withhold information from the minority that we would need to use to prepare for.
When it comes to whistleblowers, you're not. And I would just remind the committee, remind everyone. Look, when it comes to whistleblowers, you are not.
That's not right.
It's shocking that the gentleman.
That is not right.
It's shocking that the gentleman
so much about the whistleblower and the impeachment.
It's shocking that the gentleman from New York would state that
we had
when you were part of an investigation with an anonymous
whistleblower. We
have. Chairman, these individuals I can't
hear five people at once. Can we have regular order?
Mr. Chairman,
I'm
inquiring, and I was not.
And I've told
inquiring.
You that when it comes to whistleblowers, you are not entitled to it. That's at the discretion of Mr. Allen.
Mr. Chairman, these individuals
said,
have been determined not to be whistleblowers.
To
these are not whistleblowers. They've been determined by the agency not to be whistleblowers. Are you deciding that they're whistleblowers?
Yes, the law decides. Did you not listen to Mr. Levitt's testimony? Did you not read the law?
His
the law decides that they are whistleblowers.
His attorney
the chair
is
recognizes
that they are
the gentlelady from
the
New
law
York.
Has not determined
the gentlelady
that
from
they
New York has been recognized.
The law has not determined they are whistleblowers. His attorney is just asserting that.
Gentlelady from New York.
That sounded fun. So, in other words, no, not in other words. They're whistleblowers because the maggots say they're whistleblowers. They're whistleblowers because a maggot pettifogger says they're whistleblowers, but there's been no legal determination that they are, in fact, whistleblowers. The agency itself says they are not whistleblowers. They do not fall under the statute. And, well, I wonder if they can even... I mean, they're using they and them. I don't know if that's the 14th century, because they, by the way, they and them has been around in the English language since the 14th century for describing someone of whose gender one is uncertain or whose identity is uncertain. So when they're talking about whistleblower, they, and they're making Jim Jacket off Jordan use pronouns. But I honestly don't know if they're talking about multiple whistleblowers or if they're talking about one person whose identity and gender they're trying to keep hidden. Or who might be, and at this point I'm not ashamed to say this, entirely imaginary. That was Debbie Wasserman Schultz saying these individuals have been determined not to be whistleblowers. These are now whistleblowers. And yes, he's deciding they're whistleblowers. And you'll note that Jim Jacket Off Jordan doesn't even know the difference between a point of order and a point of inquiry. That's what happens when you go to the Dross Bunky School of Law. And at this point, he's just making shit up, including, entirely possibly, the whistleblower themselves. This whole hearing was a hot mess. Stacey Plaskett of the Virgin Islands brought some hell to a can of whoop-ass to open.
I'm chilled by that same individual saying that the FBI are brown shirts, that they're Nazis, that the law enforcement agency are, in fact, Nazis. That's a more chilling component to me. But, you know, this is more of the same that we see each and every time that we're here. First, just as was demonstrated in the process that we're in right now, an unwillingness to follow precedent, follow the rules. The rules don't apply. When it comes to the Republicans, they want different set of rules for themselves than everyone else. They want a different set of rules for their political beliefs than other individuals have. Individuals who are espousing their beliefs on the job where they're not supposed to, it's okay when it's their beliefs. But if it were somebody else, then a different set of rules would apply to them. Hiding information, it's all part and parcel of the Republicans' attempt to make Americans distrust our rule of law so that when 2024 comes around, and should their candidate not win, more and more people will not believe the truth. The truth matters. The truth matters. And hiding information and stating a lie over and over again does not make it true. And we will continue to, yes, be concerned. And, Mr. Chairman, I continue to say that there are, I believe, areas that I think that we can work on. I have not had a discussion with you. You know, I've sent you letters about what I believe those areas are. No response with regard to that. But in their times.
Time the gentlelady's expired.
Again, Stacey Plaskett, who knows of which she speaks, representative of the Virgin Islands. And even though the rules of that committee say that every member of the committee gets the statements, well, rules? We don't need no stinking rules. It'll be a long way to November 2024. This was in House Judiciary. And like I said, this hearing was a mess. And I'm so old I can remember when we howled in outrage about Debbie Wasserman Schultz when she was running the DNC. But she seems pretty competent in this hearing. even as things began, one of the witnesses for the maggots was a field office agent of the FBI from Miami, a dude named Steve Friend. And he even lost his security clearance. He didn't lose it. He had it taken away from him. It was revoked. Because, here we go. It turned out that he was a supporter of the domestic terrorists who attacked the capital of the United States on January 6, 2021. Friend and another FBI employee both lost their clearances. Jacqueline Almani, writing for the Washington Post, said, "The letter signed by FBI Acting Assistant Director Christopher Dunham, not Durham, and addressed to Representative Jim Jordan, the chairman of the committee, was responding to a subpoena from the subcommittee on the weaponization of the federal government that sought information regarding the security clearance adjudications of former FBI agent Stephen Friend and Marcus Allen, an FBI agent who is suspended without pay. Friend and Allen have been billed by the committee as whistleblowers and were expected to testify, did today, in a hearing, etc. Dunham writes that Friend's top secret clearance was revoked Tuesday after a referral from the FBI's Jacksonville, Florida field office had prompted the Bureau's security division to open an investigation in September 22. Friend's security clearance was suspended on September 16, 2021. The investigation concluded that Friend presented a number of security concerns related to his personal conduct, handling of protected information, and use of information technology. Among Friend's troubling conduct is reportedly promoting conspiracy theories about the January 6th attack on the capital of the United States." That would be a domestic terrorism attack. Somehow or another, the multimillionaire for-profit media seem to have a problem accurately referring to what happened on January the 6th, 2021. Allen's clearance was revoked because the agency was concerned about his, and this is a quote, allegiance to the United States because he failed to provide relevant information to an FBI special agent regarding subjects who were allegedly involved in criminal activity at the U.S. Capitol on January 6, 2021. And those aren't the whistleblowers who have disappeared. And so, at the beginning of this hearing, well, Debbie Wasserman Schultz, it meant not to be trifled with.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I ask unanimous consent to enter into the record this document that clearly indicates the questions of allegiance to the United States on the part of Mr. Allen, and that were specifically the reasons for the revocation of his security clearance, in spite of the gentle lady from Florida's assertions to the contrary. Thank you. Mr. Friend, I find some humor in the irony of Republicans inviting you here the same week Congress is focused on honoring law enforcement. You've repeatedly made calls to undermine our law enforcement agencies. Since being rightly suspended, you've led Republican calls to defund law enforcement, recently describing the FBI as a feckless garbage institution. Since joining Twitter in November, no less than 40 times, you called for our brave law enforcement personnel to be defunded. You even urged local police to sabotage criminal investigations by urging citizens to, and I quote, pressure your sheriffs to refuse to cooperate with FBI investigations. That is not only the reckless advice, it's a recipe for allowing more criminals to run loose in our neighborhoods.
He sounds nice. She continued.
Time. You also claim that your top secret security clearance was improperly revoked, yet an independent investigation concluded that you demonstrated a number of security concerns, which included that you refused to execute a court-ordered arrest warrant and when you downloaded documents from intelligence systems to an unauthorized removable flash drive. The cherry on top could be your unauthorized recording of executive management, which I'm sure you know violates Florida law, along with your unsanctioned interviews with Sputnik News, established by the Russian government in 2014 and fully owned by the Kremlin and Putin's cronies.
Time of the gentleman
has expired. Clear who is weaponizing government.
The gentleman from Florida is reckoning.
Time.
My goodness gracious, Sputnik. It's a ringing endorsement. Friend to Putin, maybe? Well, okay, not a friend. Maybe an ally. But hell's bells, this is who they are. And still, no... no missing informant. Still can't find him. Oh me, oh me. Feckless garbage, garbage institution. Nazis. Not to put too fine a point on it or anything, but there are Nazis in the United States, and some of those were in evidence at the domestic terrorist attack on the capital of the United States on January 6, 2021. Not saying. Just saying. I mentioned toward the beginning of the program, by the way, if you're listening to the podcast, please like and subscribe and leave a comment. Tell your friends and neighbors. Share it on social media. Hey, did you hear this? That'd be really helpful. We have today another unanimous decision of the Supreme Court of the United States. Those never cease to amaze me. It's an interesting case, probably not the best fact pattern, and, well, our most puissant dread sovereign Supreme Catholic Majesties do like a good fact pattern. One person was killed in 2015 in the terror attacks in Paris, France, the default Paris, not Paris, Kentucky, or Paris, Texas. Noemi Gonzalez was killed that day. This was the terror attacks of Charlie Hebdo, I believe. And her parents sued Google and YouTube, Google owning YouTube, because they said that Google disseminated terrorist videos from ISIS via their algorithm. The Gonzalez family lost all the way to the Supreme Court. And it all had to do with something called the Communications Decency Act and Section 230 thereof. And it gets rather complicated rather quickly. The bottom line is that internet companies have blanket immunity for the crap that goes up on their platforms, posted by individual users, regardless of how vulgar, how defamatory, how discriminatory, how absolutely, reasonably, and foreseeably dangerous the post may be. the oral arguments for it back in February lasted almost 3 hours. And the justices, who probably, several of whom, probably can't get their old VCRs to stop blinking 12, homed in on algorithms and whether the algorithms themselves should be protected as an inherent function of online publishing. The lawyer for the grieving Gonzalez family, Eric Schnapper, said algorithms are ubiquitous, but the question is, what does the defendant do with algorithms? If it uses the algorithm to direct, to encourage people to look at ISIS videos, that's within the scope of liability. It's the recommendation practice we think is actionable. Anyone who has ever received a really stupid ad from Google knows that that's probably bullshit. Not the argument, but the fact that Google then said, no, our algorithms are content neutral, and they're only based on the interests of the user. That's just silly. I have no interest whatsoever in seeing an ad for Make West Virginia Great Big Old Governor Jim Justice's Senate campaign, but I get them anyway. And frankly, the same goes for the ads for Joe to the Mansion Born. The pettifogger for Google, Lisa Blatt, said, "Helping users find the proverbial needle in the haystack is an existential necessity on the internet. Search engines thus tailor what users see based on what's known about users." This was an uphill climb for the Gonzalez family. Sammy Bad Breath, one of the ones whose VCR is probably blinking, said, "I don't know where you draw the line. That's the problem." And then the handmaid said, "What about users and retweets and likes? I gather Section 230 would protect me from liability if I simply retweeted." You know, maybe a tweet about how awesome it is to be a handmaid for the people of praise. To the Biden administration's credit, they supported, via the Deputy U.S. Solicitor General, Malcolm Stewart, lifting the liability shield. And Malcolm Stewart said, "Well, those are difficult issues." And then allegedly liberal Elena Kagan said, "Well, we're a court. We really don't know about these things." At least she was honest. You know, these are not like the 9 greatest experts on the internet. And that was when the peanut gallery giggled. "There's a lot of uncertainty going the way you would have us go, in part just because of the difficulty of drawing lines in this area, and just because of the fact that once we go with you, all of a sudden we're finding that Google isn't protected, and maybe Congress should want that system, but isn't that something for Congress to do, not the court?" Oh, it is to laugh and cry at the same time. Once again, the court does from time to time attempt to evade responsibility by punting on second down. This is the old Life cereal ad. Let's get Mikey. He'll eat it. He'll eat anything. Congress should do it. Congress can do anything. Congress can't do dick. That's a complicated legal term, by the way. Congress can't. The only thing that the Republican Congress can do is hold America hostage over the goddamn debt ceiling and bark and grunt and bray and bleat about potties and trans women in sports. Don't blame me. And then whatever leaves the House and goes to the Senate has to get around a non-constitutional anachronism called the filibuster and get 60 votes in order to even be voted on the floor. I mean, I know each individual, well, maybe almost every individual member of the Supreme Court could probably recite the Constitution of the United States word for word. Honestly, I'd kind of like to hear it because I'd like to see what happens when Fappy Thomas gets to the three-fifths clause. But I'm just mean. That's all it was a punt. They didn't care if it stopped on the one or rolled into the in and out of the end zone. They just wanted it out from in front of them. Lawyer Schnapper said, algorithms affirmatively recommend things. You turn on your computer and the computers at YouTube send you stuff you didn't ask them for. They just send you stuff. It's no different than if they were sending you emails. But then, because the money always wins, Lisa Blatt from Google responding to a question from Brett Kavanaugh, who probably worries a lot about browser histories, said, what are the implications for the economy? We have to take seriously that, say, this is going to cause a lot of economic dislocation in the country. Lawsuits will be nonstop over defamatory material.
No, they won't. No, they wouldn't. This would not have undone the law of defamation in this country.
It witnessed what happened to Nitwit Nero a couple of Wednesdays back, or a Tuesday back. And even Justice Ketanji Brown Jackson, who kind of made some noises that seemed like she had some degree of sympathy for the parents of a young woman slaughtered by terrorists. Well, she said, it's hard to tell how an algorithm differs from how a newspaper editor decides what story to put on the front page. And noted that that's a legally protected decision. An algorithm is not an editor. Among other things, an algorithm cannot knock down a fifth of cheap scotch in an afternoon. Sorry. Speaking to Lawyer Schnapper for the Gonzalez family, again, this is back in February. She said, why is calling it a recommendation actually any different? You have an algorithm, and in the universe of things that exist, you're presenting it to people so that they can read it. Even though you call it a recommendation or whatever, why is that act any different than being a publisher? And Lawyer Schnapper said, with respect to what prominence you give it, that's the result of an internet company's own choice, not the third-party poster of the content. Yeah. And Naomi's poor parents said after that hearing in February, "We feel confident after listening to all the arguments. We just hope that this will change the laws and it'll be for the good, so other families don't have the pain that we're feeling." Well, Mr. Gonzalez, I hate to break it to you, but you already know by now. Hope in one hand. And so not one justice, not one single solitary justice of the Supreme Court of the United States would even speak up for the people who are suffering. And will never see their daughter again. Ultimately, the final indignity, and you cannot convince me that this is not intentional, the ultimate indignity is that the author of this unanimous decision is Clarence Pubes on the Coke Can Fappy Thomas. So that means that Ketanji Brown Jackson, Elena Kagan, and Sonia Sotomayor all signed off on an opinion written by an entirely corrupt, wholly crooked Supreme Court justice in the name of comity and collegiality. See, they can do things unanimously when they want to. You know, the whole team has to punt. If the center sends the ball back to the punter, but somebody decides to go off tackle, shit can get sideways in a hurry. There was a Google case and there was a Twitter case. The Twitter case was brought by families of victims of an ISIS attack on a nightclub in Istanbul, Turkey in 2017. And Fappy said that those plaintiffs have failed to allege that defendants intentionally provided any substantial aid to the Reyna attack or otherwise consciously participating in the Reyna attack, much less that defendants so pervasively and systematically assisted ISIS as to render them liable for every ISIS attack. Entirely missing the point, by the way. Because Fappy says, intentionally and otherwise consciously, the very nature of the allegations was that the companies were indirectly complicit. That they did or failed to do things that, I don't know, the reasonable and prudent internet platform would have done or not done. And sincerely, I don't even know if Google and Twitter even tried to argue that they had any kind of a duty to remove things. But by God, especially with YouTube, don't you dare play a clip of a popular song. Your ass will get busted. Ask John Britovo, my dear friend, what happens if you run a clip of a live debate that's in the public interest. Google will drop on you like an anvil on Wile E. Coyote. And the thing is, Section 230 of the Act was in conflict here with anti-terrorism laws in the United States that permit aggrieved people to sue persons who aid and abet by knowingly providing substantial assistance to a terrorist in perpetrating an act. Fappy Thomas was having none of it.
The fact that some bad actors took advantage of these platforms is insufficient to state a claim that defendants knowingly gave substantial assistance and thereby aided and abetted those wrongdoers' acts.
Yeah, I'm sure this was a huge victory for Twitter because it has far-ranging implications. It means that the next person who goes and shoots up the next Club Q because of things that he's read on Twitter, videos he's watched, that sort of things, that Twitter need not worry about it. And that Twitter can be used by its bigoted right-wing puddle of human waste, Leon Scum, to target the people he most hates. Over at the Computer and Communications Industry Association, Matthew Schreurs, who will probably never have to worry about any of the things that the grieving families worry about or grieve over, said,
"The court correctly recognized the narrow posture of these cases and declined to rewrite a key tenet of U.S. internet law, preserving free expression online and a thriving digital economy. No one wants to see extremist content on digital services, especially the services themselves, which are constantly vetting millions of pieces of content in real time to promote trust and safety and protect users consistent with their terms of service."
Go watch some Manosphere content. They're not protecting shit. In fact, if you complain, you'll get a message back saying that that's protected content and does not violate their terms of service. Even though the content that they discuss is behavior that is arguably illegal, certainly morally wrong, and while we're at it, disgusting. Speaking to ABC News, Halima Delaine Prado, general counsel of Google, said they're reassured by this result. "And we will continue to strengthen plans to safeguard free expression online, combat harmful content, and support businesses and creators who benefit from the internet, as well as our precious bodily fluids." I added that last part because all the parts before it are equally meaningless and absurd. Nine to nothing. Elena Kagan, Sonia Sotomayor, and Ketanji Brown Jackson signed off on an opinion by a man who perjured himself in his own confirmation hearing. It's not automatic that Fappy got to write it. That's why I'm saying this stinks of something. I feel like Fappy wrote this, got to write it, because old Balls and Strikes was trying to bolster Fappy. And at the same time trying to salvage the smoldering remains of his chief justiceship. they might have been voted down. But the three so-called liberals could have said, no, not him. Not going to sign off on an opinion he writes. No, not going to. Can't make me. Remember? There's no rules up here. Those three could have concurred in the result without adding to the cachet of Clarence Pubes on the Coke can, Fappy Thomas. Those three women signed off on an opinion with the other six. The other six being individuals who reduced, well, at least back when they were of childbearing age, those three women to second-class citizens in the United States. I mean, I know they all want to get along there. It's just, it's not that small a building. But still, you know, the collegiality and comedy, right? Wonder what it would look like if those three refused to participate. If those three found their inner Bartleby the Scrivener and said, I prefer not to. But they let Ketanji Brown Jackson write an opinion the other day, and well, I guess that was enough. Maybe I'm overreacting. But when people are protesting in the streets over the things that this court has done to them, now, wait a minute, I see it all now. It's crystal clear. Remember the case the other day that was a unanimous decision that gave a trans woman from Guatemala a chance, just a chance. It wasn't a win. She doesn't get to stay. She gets to argue her case again for not being sent back to Mexico or Guatemala to be raped some more. She just gets the chance. In fucking Texas. Well, that's the opinion Ketanji Brown Jackson got to write, and she got to use the trans woman's correct pronouns. And even when there was a concurrence, the evil old men who concurred didn't refer to the woman as an illegal alien or he or him. They got the pronouns right. Here's the price of that. And I believe with my entire heart that this court is that corrupt, that that kind of horse trading actually goes on. Speaking to ABC News, Asha Rangappa, former FBI agent and lawyer, former dean of the Yale School of Law, said, there is a policy question here of how we can continue to allow these social media companies to function. We don't want them paralyzed by lawsuits, but we also need to clamp down on some of the ways that terrorist groups can facilitate their recruitment. These companies are built to make money from advertising revenue, and they make advertising revenue by keeping people on their platforms and active. I think we need to change the incentives here to change the landscape. Ha! Look! Son of a gun! Capitalism strikes again. Late-stage capitalism is a hell of a nightmare, isn't it? Over in the Senate, the chair of the Senate Judiciary Committee, Dick Durbin, said, this is disappointing but unsurprising. The justices passed on their chance to clarify that Section 230 is not a get-out-of-jail-free card for online platforms when they cause harm. Enough is enough. Big tech has woefully failed to regulate itself. Imagine that.
Congress must step in, reform Section 230, and remove platforms' blanket immunity from liability. Congress must. Ah, Senator Durbin, with all due respect, any sentence that begins Congress must is kind of dead on arrival. Because the fact of the matter is, Congress can't. Congress cannot. Congress is incapable. Congress is negligent. Congress is beyond negligent. Congress is criminally indifferent. Of course, something might happen if, say, in 2024 we get a meaningful majority in the House and, oh, I don't know, get 60 Democrats in the Senate and keep Joe Biden. Just saying that out loud should make it abundantly clear. I know, little ray of fucking sunshine, right? Sure. But should make it abundantly clear the likelihood, or lack thereof, of anything of substance happening in Congress must. That whole thing was a little complicated, and it ate up some time. I hope I didn't delve into too much detail. But this is going to continue to be a problem, and what these people did in this ugly little case of horse trading. Well, little lady, we'll let you write the pronoun opinion, long as Fappy gets to kiss the ring of the internet companies. That's what Har Har wants, you know. Har Har probably got stock in the Google. So Ralphs had asked, "What's the trade-off for the three minority justices?" I hope I made that clear. Pure speculation on my part, but damned if it doesn't make an abundance of sense, if only to me. Section 230 in the future of tech, Lee, who knows a little bit about it, in New York, says, what is not stated is that as the world faces the consequence of AI able to create, who knows, regulations will not exist. Signed, Lee, scaring everyone from New York City. Oh, there was a scary little hearing about AI a couple of days ago. When an AI titan said, yeah, we try to make these things as safe as we can, but, well, shit, who knows? I mean, he didn't say exactly that, but close enough for government work. So, I don't know. A couple of notes from Scott in San Diego, robed indifference. In the old Mickey Rooney, Judy Garland, Andy Hardy films, wasn't Mickey's pop old Judge Hardy? If I'm recalling correctly, he meted out justice with heart and humanity, being sure the law didn't suffer or be diminished in the exercise, nor would the person before the bench be.
We sure could use some more of that from behind the Supreme Court bench. And adds, here's a phrase that pays to hold in reserve, a masterpiece of faulty construction. I'm sure it'll fit in late May or into June when some of the high court's rulings are issued. Oh, y'all, something wicked this way comes. Say, look, y'all, they're getting along. Ain't that just sweet? Yeah. Sweet as a cookie with arsenic baked in it. So we are rapidly approaching the end of the second hour of the program. Sometimes they fly by, even the long filibusters. If you would like to, if you've got anything you want to say or would like to participate in the program, you're welcome to jump in. The stress line, of course, is 844-843-4676 for those listening live. 844-THE-HORN, T-H-E-H-O-R-N. And, of course, over on Skype, Robin, R-O-B-Y-N, Kincaid, K-I-N-C-A-I-D, Horn, H-O-R-N. Kincaid and Horn are one word. Just search me on Skype. It'll pop right up. Send me a contact request if you never have before. And we'll get to chatting. In the meantime, however, it is Thorn in the Side Thursday, and I do indeed hate to just blow by the green news report, as I sometimes, unfortunately, do. So this evening, I'm going to try not to do that. Take it away, Brad and Desi.
It's Thursday, May 18, 2023.
The last 7 years have been the warmest ever, and the next five will be the yet warmest ever. We've seen the coolest years of the rest of our lives.
Scientists warn world likely to blow past 1.5 degrees Celsius climate target by 2027.
The torrential rains followed months of drought, worsening the impact of the floods, meteorologists said.
Italy and Somalia stricken by torrential rains and deadly floods. Plus, buckle up, the entire U.S. will see an unnaturally hot summer, NOAA warns.
Oh, I hate that NOAA guy. All of those stories and more straight ahead from BradBlog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
My budget cuts $30 billion in spending on tax subsidies for big oil companies. They made $200 billion. They don't need a $30 billion subsidy.
That's not what the other guy told me.
If elected president again, what is the first thing you would do to help bring down the cost to make things more affordable?
Drill, baby, drill.
Well, there you go. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, despite all of the efforts across the globe to do something about it, is it really helping?
Well, it's helping a little, but not fast enough. The World Meteorological Organization this week warned that over the next 5 years, fossil fuel pollution and a potential El Nino are likely to temporarily push global temperatures past the Paris Climate Agreement's 1.5 degrees Celsius threshold above pre-industrial levels for at least 1 year, mm-hmm. for the first time ever. And it's almost certain that the world will break the record for the hottest year in history that was set back in 2016. All that will further intensify already extreme weather disasters around the world. Climate scientists say it's important to remember that the biggest danger is not when an individual year temporarily crosses the 1.5 Celsius target, but when the world permanently breaches it and stays there.
Oh, so if it happens once, no big deal.
It's still a big deal. Oh. In a press conference, WMO Chief Pieteri Talas explained the trend line is not good.
We haven't been able to limit the warming so far, and we are still moving in the wrong direction.
The increasingly intense effects of global heating are already here. A stunning heat wave in the Pacific Northwest has broken numerous daily and monthly high temperature records in Oregon and Washington, and intensified wildfires in Alberta, Canada's tar sands oil region. Many areas are seeing 20 to 30 degrees Fahrenheit above seasonal norms. Recent studies confirm that man-made climate change has made intense heat waves 5 times more likely than in the past. The entire U.S. will see an unnaturally hot summer. That's according to the NOAA Climate Prediction Center's latest three-month outlook. That will increase the risk of more frequent and intense heat waves, wildfires, and drought in the U.S. The U.S. Department of Agriculture warned that farmers in the Midwest, already plagued by persistent drought, are poised to abandon withered crops at the highest rate in more than a century.
Which, of course, is going to drive up all kinds of prices, while Fox News tells everyone climate change isn't a problem at all.
Yep. In northern Italy, deadly floods killed at least 9 people and forced thousands to evacuate after some areas were hit with half their yearly rainfall in just 36 hours. The floods destroyed roads and bridges and forced the cancellation of the Formula One Grand Prix race. In Somalia, torrential rains and floods have killed at least 22. In both Italy and Somalia, scientists say severe drought worsened the impacts of floods by reducing the soil's capacity to absorb water. Tragedy in Texas City, Texas. The region's second oil refinery fire in less than 2 weeks killed an employee at the Marathon refinery on Galveston Bay. That's along a stretch of Texas coast that is heavily populated by petrochemical facilities. In other news, the Biden administration has granted a key permit for the controversial proposed Mountain Valley Pipeline to run through a section of the Jefferson National Forest in West Virginia. That, part of an agreement last year to secure the vote of conservative Democratic Senator Joe Manchin of West Virginia to pass Biden's landmark climate law, the Inflation Reduction Act. But some good news. The Biden administration announced nearly $11 billion in grants and loans to help rural energy and utility providers deploy renewable energy in rural communities using funds from the Inflation Reduction Act. It's the single largest investment in the rural electric grid since President Franklin Roosevelt's 1936 Rural Electrification Act. Finally, wind energy has generated more electricity than natural gas for the first time. In the UK, a new analysis confirms that over the first 3 months of the year, more than 40% of the UK's electricity was generated by clean, renewable wind and solar, with only a third coming from fossil fuels like gas and coal.
Well, remember,
drill, baby, drill.
For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
I heard somebody say, burn, baby, burn. Burn, baby, burn. Burn them all down. Burn, baby, burn. Burn, baby, burn. Burn them all down.
Joe Manchin. Jesus Christ. Sorry, sometimes that's all you can say. Sorry, sending a message to Brother Deacon Asa. Jude's having some problems connecting to the Horn website. Sorry, move the mic, Robin. Oh, let's see what's next. Darlene says, must see Democratic prosecutor on DOJ case against Trump. Dan Goldman responding to Brian Tyler Cohen here, read George Santos being an albatross around Republicans' collective neck. Let me see if I can get it queued up. Just a second. Sorry for the dead air. Oh, and by the way, just real quick, we are into the third hour of the program. George, at the beginning of the program, got us down to $660 to go to get caught up. $60 gets us done with Tuesday, and then it's yesterday and today. If you'd like to help out, it would be much appreciated. Even if it's just a matter of knocking down the remainder from Tuesday. The PayPal button's over at headon.live, of course. And, okay, so Brian Tyler Cohen interviewing 10th Congressional District Representative Democrat Dan Goldman, lead impeachment counsel in the first impeachment. Let's see what he's got to say.
Santos's office back in January, I believe. Do you think that George Santos should resign? Because I know there are a lot of calls for him to do so. Or do you think that there's more value in him sticking around to basically serve as an albatross around Republicans' necks? Because I think it's clear that he's not an especially potent tool for Republicans going into this next election.
I think George Santos should have resigned long ago once he admitted that he deceived his voters in order to get the seat in Congress. I think he should have resigned yesterday after he was charged criminally, including for some additional lies that have now been charged in an indictment. George Santos does not belong in Congress. And I think from my perspective, as somebody who is really fighting to bolster and buoy our democratic institutions, that includes Congress, that includes the Supreme Court, that includes the FBI and the intelligence community and the State Department and so many of our executive agencies that are, for some reason, under attack by Donald Trump and those who support him. We need to be living up to the highest standards. And George Santos does not belong walking in the halls of Congress. He is a con, a fraud, and a liar, and he lied his way into his seat in Congress, and he needs to go immediately. So I don't buy into the sort of political game theory of, well, maybe it would be better to have George Santos so Democrats can make the argument Republicans, just like I don't buy into the argument that it's better to have Donald Trump as the Republican nominee because there's a better chance that Joe Biden will win. We need to root out authoritarians, autocrats, and those who are anti-democratic from the entire political and public arena so that we can get back to being the great democracy that we are. And we need to do that every day.
I just want to go back and ask one more question on the Trump of it all in terms of the legal stuff. And that is there an impending case in your opinion, whether it's at the DOJ or Fulton County or the New York AG's office, where you think that Trump has a viable defense for any of these impending indictments?
Oh, I could sit here and come up with defense. I think any lawyer probably could do that. And, you know, Donald Trump, like many mob bosses that I prosecuted, is careful. He doesn't write emails. He doesn't write texts. He speaks in code. He sends subliminal messages that he knows how they'll be received. So it's harder to prove a case against Donald Trump than it is against someone like George Santos, you know, who makes just bald-faced lies and very blatant and obvious fraud schemes. So without getting into all the details and the facts of each of the investigations, there's certainly a defense. And that's the other thing is these witnesses, you know, don't just go in on direct examination where the prosecutors get to bring out, you know, the incriminating evidence. They also get cross-examined. And the defense also has an opportunity to present a case and to present an alternative theory. That's what makes our system work. And that's what should be happening in the Manhattan DA's office, not having Congress try to intervene as a personal defense attorney to Donald Trump. But that's what our system relies on so that we make sure that the vast majority of people, and it's sad that I have to say the vast majority as opposed to everyone, because in some places it doesn't work this way, but that people who are convicted actually did commit the crimes.
Now, I want to move ahead, I guess, to the horse race of it all and looking ahead to 2024. I'm sure you've been faced with the question of Biden's age. How do you reconcile the age question with the danger of someone like Donald Trump?
Well, look at President Biden's record. Last Congress was one of the most consequential Congresses in a couple generations, with some of the most significant and meaningful legislation that was passed that is going to dramatically improve the lives of the American people across the board. And people want to focus on his age. But when you look at him at the State of the Union and you look at what he's been able to accomplish, his track record is incredibly impressive. And so I'm looking forward as a member of Congress to be able to help to implement all of the incredible legislation that was passed in the last Congress. So that because there's a delay once a bill is passed before it gets executed and implemented. And so we're now starting to see infrastructure projects being started all over the country. We're seeing some of the green subsidies that were in the Inflation Reduction Act start to be used by businesses. We're seeing some businesses get benefits from the CHIPS and Semiconductor Act. We're starting to see a lot of the benefits of this legislation. And I'm excited to, for the American people to start to really internalize and understand firsthand all of the significant achievements that President Biden has delivered to this point. So I'm very proud to support him. I think he's done a fantastic job, and I look forward to making that case.
You know, it's actually kind of refreshing to hear a ringing endorsement of the job that President Biden is doing, which kind of turns to ashes in my mouth. You knew that was coming, didn't you? When I, you heard, I trust, Brad and Desi talking about the Biden administration signing off. Yeah, hell. Ruined some of the Jefferson National Forest in West Virginia. Shit, those people have been let, those hillbillies been letting people blow up their mountains for a generation. They won't even notice. That's really cynical on my part. But they did not have to do this. Except they did have to do this. Because this was part of the VIG that the Biden administration paid in exchange for the grudging support of Joe Manchin, who now says that he will block any appointee to head the Environmental Protection Agency that Joe Biden sends to the Senate Committee on Natural Resources. God! And then, for all I know, Joe to the Manchin born may shank Joe Biden and run on a third way ticket. You know, that grifter outfit that's actually run by Trump money, by the money that's behind Trump. Oh, and by the way, the third way people are skeevy as shit. They recently got warned by the Secretary of State of Maine, because they had signature gatherers going around in Maine trying to get third way on the presidential ballot in 2024, and they were doing it by fraud, because of course, it's what the hell they are. They're fraud merchants. What they were doing is they had their petition gatherers going around. You know, they'll hang out at mall shopping centers, whatever. And they'll say, hey. Wrong accent for Maine. Hey, how would you like to sign a petition here to get a new party on the ballot? Yeah? I mean, we like our independent. Aren't you sick of nothing but Democrats and Republicans? Pepperidge Farm remembers. And so the rubes sign, and a couple of days later they find out that they've just joined a new political party. They didn't know they were joining a new political party. They didn't want to join a new political party.
They just wanted to see a little more fairness in the system. You know, maybe a third party would be good for America.
Even though this is a system that admits, that's first past the post, that has no room or no means of accommodating a third party. Yeah, they looked at,
I just joined the third way party. I didn't want to join the third way.
So they're liars and cheats. And no one should be surprised, especially since they're swanning around with Joe to the mansion born. Ugh. So there's that. And, God. Sometimes the press releases from Nitwit Nero are comedy gold. At the beginning of the program, I mentioned the fight between House of Mouse and White Boots Duclantis. I don't think I could stand to cash their check, but, you know, I could really help them with some better names. The title for this one is
President Trump is Always Right.
The Sanctus is being absolutely destroyed by Disney. His original PR plan fizzled, so now he's going back with a new one in order to save face. Disney's next move will be the announcement that no more money will be invested in Florida because of the governor. In fact, they could even announce a slow withdrawal or sale of certain properties, or the whole thing. Watch! That would be a killer. In the meantime, this is also unnecessary. A political stunt. Rod should work on the squatter mess. Ron should work on the squatter mess.
Right, because Nitwit Nero's a friend of the LGBTQ plus community. Sure he is. Except he gives speeches saying that he's going to do everything to build ovens for the likes of me. Call me skeptical. But nonetheless, it is... You know, come on, let's you and him fight. It is enjoyable to watch him hammering Monkey up. And as the multimillionaire pundits often remark, Monkey up hasn't even begun to feel the full force of a Nitwit Nero assault. Look what he did in 2016 to Jeb Bush. Has anybody even heard of Jeb Bush lately? Is he just out there on the golf course? Does he even show up in public? I haven't seen a news story about Jeb Bush since he said please clap during the 2016 primary season. Remember when we thought that Jeb Bush was the one to beat? Oh, silly us. But Nitwit Nero's been busy today. Now that he's got a $5 million judgment against him in state court in New York, his other email said,
Friend, our justice system is truly dead. In Trump probe, special counsel zooms in on possible criminal charges. Raskin says special counsel Jack Smith likely mulling seditious conspiracy charges against Trump. But this is America under crooked Joe Biden and the radical Democrats, a third world tin pot dictatorship that targets, silences, and even arrests its political opposition.
Yeah, because that's why he got arrested. Not exactly.
With the Biden DOJ's hand-picked special counsel dragging me through yet another phony witch hunt, it feels like every day that our incredible supporters ask me, Sir, because they always start with Sir. How do you do it? How do you keep going despite the lies, the smears, and the attacks? But the answer is simple.
Oh, I need music for this.
I will never surrender our country to their tyranny, because I truly love America, its potential for greatness, the hope, opportunity, and freedom that it stands for, and the amazing patriots who call it home. You. But in the radical left's sick and twisted pursuit to get Trump, they are willing to undermine every value upon which our beautiful country was built.
I guess our beautiful country was built on the foundational principle that sexual abusers should be able to do so at will because they're celebrities.
They love to cry foul and talk of voter suppression, but what about the more than 74 million Americans whose votes they seek to erase with each new phony witch hunt they concoct? You see, the MAGA movement was never about me. It was always about you. Always about you. For the past 8 years, I've simply been your voice against the swamp politicians of both parties, the deep state and the entrenched globalist bureaucrats. And that is why I will never give an inch to the left's despicable witch hunts, because if they win in 2024, our country is truly lost. So if you're like me...
This is a great hustle. I mean, it's pathetic and stupid and... No one with the IQ of kelp buys into it. But God, it works great on the maggots.
If you're like me, and you refuse to allow these radical lunatics to try and cancel out your vote, then I have to ask you that you stand with me and help peacefully defend our movement during this dark chapter in our nation's history.
Oh, this is so good. But if you're struggling right now, due to Crooked Joe's moronic and disastrous policies, please do not read any further. And don't even think about donating. You and your family always come first. And don't worry, when we win back the White House, the greatest economy in history will come roaring back. Maybe COVID will too. China. Oh, I added that last part. Please make a contribution of any amount, truly, even just $1, to help defend our movement from the never-ending witch hunts and save America and what is truly our country's final hope. For 1,500% impact. This way to the egress, believe me, you've never seen anything like this egress. There are other egresses, but this is the egress of all egresses because it's the Trump egress. And it's this way.
Oh, dear God.
You know, it's hard doing that. And not just as a matter of habit reaching for the rot gut tequila and the swirly straw. I guess we have to get to this one, too. Marginal trailer queen may have messed with the wrong person, finally. This is good. She actually got into a tiff, I guess. Outside the Capitol. It was a big to-do. It was a tempest in a teapot. It was full of sound and fury, signifying nothing. And it started with Marginal Trailer Queen introducing articles of impeachment against President Biden. This led to a confrontation on the steps of the Capitol building yesterday, when people were sticking microphones in George Santos's face. Because Jamal Bowman started yelling at Santos from across the steps, hollering, New Yorkers, because Jamal Bowman is a congressman from New York, and he said, New Yorkers didn't need better. You got to kick him out. You'll note that this had nothing to do with Marginal Trailer Queen, but she injected herself into the situation, going up to Bowman. And he turned and yelled at her and said, you got to get rid of him. Marge then, in turn, turned to the microphones and started chanting impeach Biden and yelling at Jamal Bowman to close the U.S.-Mexico border and save the country. The whole thing was eventually broken up by AOC, who stepped in and said, come on, man, she ain't worth it. And then said she was swarmed during the confrontation, even though she's the one who sought to confront Jamal Bowman. Yeah, so let's start here. This is actually a tweet from California Governor Gavin Newsom, who apparently has one hellacious social media team. He included the clip of Marginal Trailer Queen grunting.
I had to have so much security. There was not enough. I was swarmed. It's all on video. Everyone can see this. But I will tell you what's on video is Jamal Bowman shouting at the top of his lungs, cursing, calling me a horrible, calling me a white supremacist, which I take great offense to.
Primarily because it's true.
That is like calling a person of color the N-word, which should never happen. Calling me a white supremacist is equal to that, and that is wrong. Jamal Bowman was down there cursing at me, telling me to get the F out of there, and he was leading the mob right outside the vehicle I was sitting in. We have this all on video.
Sure you
and
do.
And then on the Capitol steps yesterday, he was the one that approached me. Even CNN reported that. Yelling, shouting, raising his voice. He has aggressive...
Oddly enough, I just read you the coverage, and no, she goes up to him.
His physical mannerisms are aggressive, and he just recently shoved Thomas Massie just outside the House chamber. I think there's a lot of concern about Jamal Bowman. So, and I am concerned about it. I feel threatened by him. He not only led a mob there, but his boisterous lies. And I'll tell you another thing he said outside there. He was saying, save your party. I kept telling him, no, save the country. It's not about political parties. We shouldn't care about political parties.
Because the Republican Party's pushing up daisies, coughing up blood on the back stoop.
Parties. We should care about the country, because no matter what our political beliefs are, Jamal Bowman, I don't know what his political beliefs are. I know what mine are, but
Yeah, your political beliefs are you don't know what cis means. Yeah, we had that clip.
Both swore an oath to serve the country here in Congress as representatives. So I am very concerned about Jamal Bowman, and he's some.
Yeah, she's concerned. She swore an oath, and then she, well, kind of asked it narrow for a pardon for what she did on January 6th. And, you know, the shoes of that, the person who placed the bomb, I can't help wondering if there's a spork foot in those boots. Blast from the past, a little bit of testimony from the suit that was heard trying to keep her off the ballot in Georgia under the 14th Amendment. This is interesting. Music? There's music.
You can't allow it to just transfer power peacefully like Joe Biden wants.
That's you, right, Ms. Green?
Rise up, we can end all of this. Flood all the government buildings. Go inside.
I don't remember. I don't recall. I got no memories of anything at all.
Is that Peter Gabriel? We can't have a peaceful transfer of power like Joe Biden wants. Well, Gavin Newsom said his physical mannerisms are aggressive. I feel threatened by him. Marjorie Taylor Greene describing Representative Bowen. This is the kind of dangerous rhetoric that led to Emmett Till's death. Everyone should call this out for what it is. Blatant racism. Because, in fact, she objects to being called a white supremacist because, well, she is a white supremacist. Good God, that woman. AOC, she ain't worth it. Oh, she ain't. And Jamal Bowman, meanwhile, in this war of words, today, said, you know, all that language she was using? Yeah, she was promoting racist tropes about black men. Because she was threatened by his physical mannerisms. Black men continue to be characterized as aggressive and threatening when we are passionate and outspoken. They're not just using dog whistles, they're using bullhorns. We've even said that. Foghorns! Now, bear in mind, Jamal Bowman has done something that Marginal Trailer Queen has never done. He's actually been a school principal in the Bronx. He's been a school principal. Marginal Trailer Queen has never been anything even remotely similar. Among other things, Bowman told Marge, no more QAnon, no more MAGA, no more debt ceiling nonsense. At which point Marge started pumping her fist and yelling, impeach Biden, impeach Biden. He said, do something about guns, to which this genius, this logician, said, right, so close the border. And even the New York Daily News says there was never any sign of anything becoming physical. Hey, push poor Timmy Massey. Whatever his name was. Tommy Massey. Speaking of cringeworthy. Yeah, this guy would get along great with Marginal Trailer Queen. This happened in North Carolina, Stan. The racist in question is a North Carolina maggot by the name of Jeffrey McNeely. Who decided to unburden himself of his opinion that his Democratic colleague, an African-American man named Abe Jones, just listen. I wish they weren't this way. So this is Abe Jones speaking. Represents Wake County. He's a Democrat.
Somebody refute that. with some data. I dare say you cannot.
Mr. Speaker, can I ask the representative a question?
Representative Jones, does the gentleman yield to a question from the gentleman from Iredell, Representative McNeely?
I absolutely will yield. Yes,
he yields.
Representative Jones, I want to ask you the question is...
Now, this is audio, but there's some video with it. Representative Jones is appropriately attired in a standard business suit. Representing McNeely from Iredell, on the other hand, is a puzzle-gutted, pasty-faced old white guy wearing a plaid sport coat that's actually in the colors of the Trans Pride flag. It's all pink and blue and white. I'm not shitting you. And a green bow tie. Oh, honey, we see you. You're valid.
I understand that you went into public school and you went to Harvard and Harvard Law. And the question, I guess, is would you have been able to maybe achieve this if you were not an athlete or a minority or any of these things, but you were a student trapped in a school that the slowest, you know, in the wild, we'll say the slowest gazelle does not survive. But
oh, great, an African reference. Yay.
Yet the herd moves at that pace. So the brightest child sometimes is held back. And don't
make
we
a point
feel...
of order. Jim may state his point of order.
Okay, I'm hoping I wasn't the only one that got shocked by that comment, that the only reason you went to Harvard is because you were black and an athlete?
I did not say that. I said, did that end up being one of the reasons? I do not know that. I asked him this.
Okay, all right.
I don't mind answering.
Jim doesn't answer the question. Sorry, I was reading a note here, so I didn't hear what was...
I apologize, and I'll reframe.
The gentleman from Iredell is no longer recognized. For what purpose, the lady from Wake, Representative Gil Rice? Representative Jones, you still have the floor, sir, to debate?
I was trying to wrap up.
The gentleman has the floor to wrap up his remarks.
Okay. I just want to say that... I'm just going to say one thing. Harvard had 5 rankings for their students. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And when I graduated from Harvard, I was in rank 2. So I earned my place, and I did well.
God, they are... they are... This is that great Denny Green clip from years gone by. They are who we thought they were. Yeah, Representative Jones in the North Carolina House graduated from Harvard. He was not in any wise an affirmative action admission. And the funny thing is, who am I kidding? There's nothing funny about this. Representative McKinney could not win a battle of wits with a refrigerator box. A busted clock is right twice a day. Mr. McKinney is not representing McKinney. But this is the kind of garbage. And make no mistake, we're talking about garbage. This is the kind of garbage that accomplished African American men and women and non-binary people have to put up with. Questions of their capability their deservingness for admission to traditionally white avenues of power and accomplishment. And old white racists, primarily old white racist men, have been doing this for generations.
Well, you only got him because he's black.
When representing McKinney, couldn't have gotten in if his last name was fucking Bush. And you know what? That was an assault on the decorum of the North Carolina House, but there will be no motion to expel Representative McKinney for his obviously racist remarks. Because, he apologized. He apologized to Representative Jones on the House floor. Said, "I respect Representative Jones. I think he's a great legislator. I think he's a great man. What I tried to ask or say did not come out right. That happens a lot, and I apologize." Well, you know, when you make the same mistake over and over and over again, sometimes people might start to think it wasn't a mistake. Then again, representing McKinney also has a habit of referring to people as Nazis. Jesus, I really want somebody to tell him about that jacket. I'm sorry, that's shallow of me. The State Bureau of Investigation? He said, North Carolina, it's a North Carolina agency. He said, "The SBI has always been kind of the tool, call them the Nazis if you want to, of the Attorney General Governor." But he apologized, so everything's good. Right? Right. Because, you know, meanwhile, Marginal Trailer Queen has a hissy over an African American man calling out a shameless practitioner of fraud inside the halls of Congress. Remember when Marge and Anthony Santos, George de Volder, Philip VI of Spain, were sitting side by side during the weaker speaker's 15 rounds debacle of trying to become speaker? Remember that? Yeah, they're buddies. And in point of fact, it was last Friday. That Representative Robert Garcia, I mentioned him previously, he's the one who introduced the resolution seeking to expel Anthony Santos, George de Volder, Kublai Khan from the House. Well, last Friday, he also introduced a resolution called the Honoring All Families Resolution, calling out Marge for what she did to Randy Weingarten, the American Federation of Teachers president, in saying that, stepmoms aren't real moms. she attacked Weingarten, saying that she wasn't. Now, this is the president of the American Federation of Teachers, that she wasn't competent to give an opinion on school closings during the pandemic because she was not a medical doctor, not a biological mother, and really not a teacher either. Well, Representative Garcia said, as an LGBTQ person myself, I know the positive impact chosen family and adoptive figures have on our community. With this resolution, we stand with these families and honor the incredible work they do to nurture, raise, and provide for their loved ones. Families come in all shapes and sizes, and they shape who we are in an immeasurable way. Marjorie Taylor Greene's comments were gross, bigoted, invalidated the thousands of loving LGBTQ plus and adoptive families across this country. A parent's ability to contribute to their child's growth and success is not defined by the circumstances by which they become a parent, and families of all backgrounds and circumstances deserve to be recognized, respected, and celebrated. Amen. Representative Garcia is making a name for himself. And good on him for that. All that is necessary for evil to triumph is for good people to do nothing. Okay. And Marge's claim that calling white supremacy is the same as using that word. Well, she got savaged in the Washington Post today by Philip Pump. That word is simply used to describe people based on skin color. It is a disparagement not of what they choose to espouse, but of a physical characteristic they don't control. What's more, it's an attack based solely on that characteristic, and the speaker's belief that this characteristic is somehow worthy of mockery or diminishment. This is a long way of saying, Bump continued, of saying that using the N-word as a pejorative is inherently racist, a disparagement of millions of people. Calling someone white supremacist is not. Even when used as an unfair attack, it's specific to that person, not to everyone like them. True enough. But we need more people calling her out, whether it's Philip Bump, Jamal Bowman, or David Garcia. And just for the pure schadenfreude of it, let me commend to you Amanda Marcotte's piece over at Salon. Lauren Boebert's divorce exposes the dark little secret of red state life. The subheading says, Lauren Boebert's divorce is funny. It also reveals why GOP men are doubling down on the misogyny. Amanda Marcotte's good. Well, when so much Republican behavior these days is too gross to be funny, she writes, there's something downright refreshing about old-fashioned Christian right hypocrisy. This time, it comes from Representative Lauren Boebert of Colorado, a biological human being, ooh, who nonetheless sounds exactly like ChatGPT channeling a Breitbart comment section. Damn. Boebert built her career on sanctimonious, though often incoherent, I love it when people use good grammar, proper syntax, and appropriate words to take people like Clanny Granny apart. Lectures on the supposed threats to the family of leftist sexual depravities like same-sex marriage or contraception. She also filed for divorce last month, a fact that only got into the press this week. Goes on to note her glee at being a 36-year-old grandma, clanny granny, or her soon-to-be ex-husband's whipping it out in the bowling alley for the underage girl. Amanda Marcotte pointing out her choice to leave Jason Bobert might be the first sign that there's functioning brain activity in Lauren Bobert's skull. As the bowling alley story suggests, the guy is a creep. He started dating then Lauren Roberts when she was 16 and he was 22. And Amanda Marcotte goes ahead and lays out some more of their sordid history. Among other things, he was arrested on domestic violence charges after he attacked her. Last August, he got the cops called on him for threatening the neighbors. But making a point, she says, all of this is a window into an aspect of red state life that hasn't been much discussed, one which is likely fueling the ugly surge in misogynist rhetoric and policy being pushed by Republicans, especially the men. My only nit to pick with that is the fact that Colorado is decidedly blue. It's not even purple. But she's from a red district, so yeah, okay. The dark little secret of red state life is there's a lot of Lauren Boberts out there. Conservative women who disavow feminism, but when given a shot at more independence for themselves, gladly use hard-won rights like divorce and abortion. Republican men are getting increasingly angry about even this minor loss of control over women. The results, Amanda Marcotte says, are ugly. A sexual predator is the front runner for the Republican nomination. Good on you, girl! You used it, yes! Abortion bans keep getting passed despite being wildly unpopular, and now there's even a GOP push to make it harder for people, mostly women, to file for divorce. She points out that the average age of a woman getting married has gone from 20 in 1950 to 29 in 2022. And she points out the hypocrisy inherent in all of this. Conservative women may denounce feminism, but still feel it's important to be self-sufficient. The story they tell themselves is it's not political, but pragmatic. Finding a good man is hard. Amanda. Good man is hard to find. Great short story by Flannery O'Connor. The villain in that piece is a man, an escapee from prison called The Misfit. If you've never read it, do please. Life without men, Amanda says, is often, frankly, easier. Statistics even show that single mothers have more free time than married mothers. It's a long piece. Her thesis is impressive. A lot of the culture war issues that wind up Republicans are, to them, mostly abstractions, drag shows they don't go to, woke pop culture they don't consume, books about racism they don't read, cosmopolitan lifestyles in big cities they don't visit. But when it comes to gender and power, the struggle was keenly felt even in Republican households. Right-leaning women may talk trash about feminism, but as Republican men often learn the hard way, even conservative women have their limits on how much crap they'll take from men. Yeah. But the thing is, having exercised the rights that other women fought for, Lauren Boebert still will not ever be a sister. She will not be an ally, because it's all, and this is typical Republicanism. This is all, this is pure MAGA. Egg'em foo, baby. Egg'em foo. I got mine. F you. Cowbell, says Leah New York, for Amanda Marcotte. Her Boebert takedown is worthy. I do so agree. Let's run over to the stress line. Somebody just rang in here right at the end of the program. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Robert, Jeremy.
Hey, Jeremy, what's up?
I want to throw this in as the last thing. I don't know how good your comic lore is, but this will prove how dumb Elon Musk is at the finale of the program.
Okay.
Evidently this week, he made a tweet comparing, of all people, George Soros to the X-Men's Magneto.
Nice.
If you know any of the lore of the X-Men, Professor Xavier and Magneto met each other in a Nazi death camp because they're Jews.
Correct.
Just let that sit for a while if you haven't figured that one out.
And in fact, he embarrassed himself, Leon Scum did, doubling down on it in an interview that just got, it's too much to even try to describe it, just got super cringy. And eventually he just punted and said, yeah, I'll say what I'm going to say. Whatever. You know, because he's Leon Scum.
I don't know if you covered this earlier. I just barely tuned in a few minutes ago, but I thought I'd hop off the show with that because it kind of made me laugh. Just pure idiocy of it.
Yeah, Magneto and Professor Xavier are, you know, frenemies.
Friends from a Nazi death camp because they were Jews. Yes, yeah. Frenemies. They busted out of a death camp together. That's how the story starts.
It's probably best that maggots like Leon Scum not read comics. It's kind of like the Punisher. You know, all these right wingers run around with Punisher hats and Punisher T-shirts. And it's not...
The Punisher punished people like them.
Bingo!
He didn't go after ordinary people. He didn't go after cops. He went after the bad guys, cruel people.
Yeah, sick people. Sadistic people. You know,
sick people,
Republicans.
Yes. Right.
You doing okay?
They try to... I'm doing good. But they always try to... They try to... Not cop-ed, but they basically try to take all the good role models from these books and try to take them over and say they were something else.
And turn them into right-wingers. Turn them into trash.
Right. Yep. I'm fine, I guess. Have a good night. Just thought I'd bring people's attention to that, but it was funny.
I think so, too. No small amount ironic as well. Jeremy, have a great evening.
Exactly. You too, thanks. Bye.
Bye. And so here we are at the end of the program. Let's see. Got down to 6:60. We'll be at 9:60 tomorrow evening. Thanks for jumping in there earlier this evening, George, in Course Gold. Thank you so much. Thanks to all of our Patreon and PayPal subscribers. Thank you to our a la carte contributors this evening, George. And thank you to each and every one of you who share your precious finite time engaging in the program in whatever manner you so choose. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you to Sparky. Thank you to Roger, Steve, wherever you are. Thank you. I know they're working. They're working you into a gray-headed old age. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa. Hey, like and subscribe the podcast wherever you listen to it. Please leave a comment. It's making a difference. Brother Deacon, I do not envy you. Brother Deacon Asa just sent me a picture. Replacing pads and rotors on the old minivan for benefit glorious nation of Kazakhstan. Asa. and that makes me think of Borat, and Borat makes me think of Rudy, and now my after the program snack is over. And done. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, 20 plus years at the forefront of the struggle for environmental justice and human rights in Appalachia. Stay safe, y'all. Found out somebody I know just got the Rona. Haven't been around him or anything, but damn it. It ain't gone. People are still dying from it. Wear your mask if you're around maggots because they're, they're a disease-bearing lot. Wash your hands, don't touch your face, use your hand sanitizer, wherever, take something with you wherever you go, pocket or purse. Maintain your social distance. If you're getting good weather, for God's sakes, get out, please, and enjoy it. It feels so good. And, well, I mean, you know, if Representative Sporkfoot comes towards you down the sidewalk bellowing about impeach Joe Biden for the southern border, avoid that cue ball like the plague, because she is. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Later.